It's 3 o'clock in time now for World Roots, and this week Lucy Duran and the 2011 World Roots Academy protégé Hari Sivanesan head to South India.
Well, Hari, you say you're a veena player, and we've come all the way to Chennai to record you playing the veena with your guru, with Arunaji.
Yes.
And you don't have a veena.
No, I didn't actually bring one with me. No, I didn't. I have five lying around the house.
What, back in London?
Back in London. However, in all these years, no one's actually come up with a veena case. They're just transported in crates, and they're very bulky, and I've been asked three times, is there a body in there?
So what are you going to do about it? You're not going to play air veena the whole time.
Well, I found a very small store, and when I say very small, it's really the size of a garden shed. And I think I passed it probably when I was about 12 or 13 and I was in Madras. And in there, I found a really old veena.
So we're not far from that shop. Shall we go and see how the veena's doing?
Yeah, definitely.
And you can decide whether you're going to buy it or not.
Okay.
Harry, what's going on?
It's in good shape.
Really
which is brilliant.
Beautiful.
It's absolutely beautiful. So
this is such a great little shop, Harry.
It is.
I mean, it's tiny, it's minute. It's very, very crowded, and it's just got lots of veenas.
It has.
Very elderly gentleman.
Yeah.
with something that looks like an altar with some candles lit at the back.
Yeah.
Your eyes, I'm afraid, are on the...
On the veena still, sorry. I'm still
tuning the
veena. I just want to check that everything's cool. Someone gave it to him to send it to be disposed.
Really?
Yes. So he thought, no, he's going to try and do with it what he can. But it's absolutely beautiful. I chanced upon this shop yesterday, completely by accident. But when I saw it from the outside, I remember so vividly seeing exactly this place when I was younger and here. So yeah, I mean, it's
serendipity that you've come here to find this very beautiful veena.
Definitely.
So Harry, are you going to buy this veena? Because you know we've got to get going. We've got a train to catch. We're going to Tanjore tonight.
Well, there's no way I'm leaving without it. So yeah.
I hope it sounds as good as it looks.
It really does. It really does.
That's very exciting. It's midnight and we're on the Rockfort Express, a train that runs from the city of Chennai on the Bay of Bengal down through the state of Tamil Nadu here in South India. With me and tucked up in their bunks are this year's World Roots Academy mentor, South India's leading singer Aruna Sairam, and the Academy's mentee, all the way from Greenwich in London, the veena player Hari Sivanesan. Over the past month, Arunaji in Chennai has been sharing with Hari some of her insights into the rich complexity of the Carnatic musical tradition, the classical music of this region. But now we're taking them and Hari's newly bought veena to the spiritual heartland of Carnatic music, the ancient city of Tanjavur. Arunaji has promised to bring us to her ancestral village to hear devotional singing in her grandfather's ashram. And we're also going to visit the shrine of South India's best-known composer, Saint Tyagaraja, which, for any lover of South Indian music, is a real pilgrimage. So, as we hurtle through the night across Tamil Nadu, I better join the others and get some sleep, because tomorrow promises to be a day of discovery for everyone in the land of temples. This is a really lovely spot, and it's also a very holy place. Arunaji, where are we?
We are at the Samadhi of composer, now venerated as a saint, Tyagaraja. And this is on the banks of the Kaveri River, beautiful open place. And this is the Samadhi where every January on the death anniversary of Tyagaraja, thousands and thousands of people congregate.
I've heard about Tyagaraja many times in connection with South Indian music. He was clearly a very important composer, and his music is still performed today.
Yes.
But now that we're here in this shrine where Tyagaraja is buried, I get the feeling that the holiness of this composer is as important as his music.
True, absolutely, because any musician that calls himself or herself a Carnatic musician has to revert to Tyagaraja. I mean, you just cannot escape him at all.
So Tyagaraja died in 1847.
Mm-hmm.
He was 80 years old when he died. That's a long time ago. How has his music been preserved? Is it through the oral tradition?
Absolutely. Because people like Tyagaraja of their time also traveled by foot a lot. And so he would spend months walking through Tamil Nadu, to temple after temple, village after village. So he collected a very devoted band of followers.
So they were musical disciples?
Yeah, they were disciples. They were musicians. They became great composers in their own right.
Well, I'm looking at the shrine now, and the figure of Tyagaraja is carved in black stone,
yes,
and he's covered in flowers, garlands of flowers. And then all around him is a kind of a gilt paneling. But then there's a photograph of a woman by the side of his tomb. Who is that?
She is Bangalore Nagaratnamma, and she is a lady who is responsible for the way things are today at this Samadhi, because she was born into a Devadasi tradition. Devadasis are women who follow the maternal link of family trees, and they don't enter into the institution of marriage. And so they are like courtesans, and they just make music. And actually, also the Nadaswaram players are similar groups of people, though they live in normal families. But very often, the men born in the Devadasi families also become Nadaswaram players, and so on and so forth. There's a link between these two groups of people, and they actually, my guru also belonged to a Devadasi clan. And they believe they were born to make music. And that is the most moving thing for me about them, you know.
And do the Devadasi continue to exist as a social institution?
No, as a system, I personally think it's very sad that institution doesn't exist anymore. Because though a certain section of these people fell into disrepute, the original Devadasi system had its own classicism, its own class. And I mean, I think it's such an inimitable system to carry music across generations that I think we're losing something, the impact of which we will know after the next or the next generation.
But you were lucky to have been taught directly
by
Devadasi.
Very blessed. I don't know.
So for you, in this part of the world, down here in South India and Tamil Nadu, music and religion are just seem to be very connected.
If you ask me frankly, I wouldn't even use the word connected. They are one to me.
And so how do you feel when you come here?
Yeah, I feel very many things. For to begin with, nostalgia, because I was a kid of 6 years old when my parents used to live in Bombay. And for me to come here and have a darshan of this shrine was like so special as a kid. You know, I was hiding behind my mother's sari and I saw her sing a song in honor of Tyagaraja. And then I saw this thousands of people singing here. So those are the first memories. And then to keep coming back here time and again, I now perform at the celebrations every year. And when I sit there and I see the lakhs and lakhs of heads that sit in front of me and the samadhi, it's a completely different feeling than performing in an auditorium or anywhere else. And then today we are here in this small group, so it's very special.
And do you remember the song that your mother sang when you were 6 years old?
Sure. You like me to hum that song for you?
I would love to hear it.
Yes. Okay. Kshirasagara vihara, Kshirasagara vihara, aparimita ghorapata kavidara, krurajana ganavidura, nigama sanchara sundara sharira, Shatamahahita vibhanga Shri Rama Samanaripu sannutanga Krutamana vantaranga Janakaja shrungara jalaja brunga Rajadi Rajavesha, Rajadi Rajavesha, Shri Rama Ramaniya Karasubhushaya, Rajadi Rajavesha, Shri Rama Ramaniya Karasubhushaya, Rajanuta Lalita Bhasha, Shri Tyagarajadi Bhakta Posha, Shri Tyagarajadi Bhakta Posha.
Oh, brought tears to my eyes. What a fabulous introduction to our time here in Tamil Nadu. Thank you, Arunaji. So, Harry, is this your first time here?
Yes, it is. It's the first time. I just feel really grateful to be here, especially to be here with Arunaji. And I really, I feel like there's something, it's a turning point. I feel like there's a reason that I'm here, and I feel very blessed to be here.
Well, Harry has brought his veena here, and it's the new veena. Well, it's the old veena, newly acquired with its new fretboard. And that special moment has arrived, I think, where you're going to perform for the first time together. And I know you've been working on this piece, and I know it's a composition by Tyagaraja, whose image we are looking at, the saint and the composer. So what is it?
So this is a piece, it's in the raga we call Hindolam. The lyrics of this piece are very significant, I think, because it talks about several things. It talks about, music and the grandeur of music. And in the first line, he says, it's like the walk of an elephant.
You know, like an elephant's
he compares,
walk.
Yes, he compares it to the Samajavara Gavana, means it's the walk of an elephant. And in the last verse, he talks about Veda Shiro, which means he talks about the Vedas being the mother of the classical music that we perform today. So we all know by the history that the Vedas were first three notes. And then slowly, the more and more notes were added, and then we got the seven notes and so on.
So these are the scriptures?
Yes, the scriptures, the ancient Hindu scriptures. So he is talking about music, the seven notes as emanating from the Vedas, which are like a mountain of musical sounds. I'm sure tomorrow when we go to Sirigumani, we are going to hear music as well as Veda recitation. So again, the comparison is going to be there right in front of us. So all of this I thought is so apt to sing the song here.
So we're about to hear a song that was composed over 150 years ago.
Yes.
By Tyagaraja.
Yes.
In honor of music.
Yes.
And performed together by you, Arunaji, and Harry for the very first time.
Yes. It's very special. Thank you.
Mama, 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 mama. Gamamagaga Gamada Gama Gada Gama Gada Gama Gada Gama Gada Gama Magasa Mama Gagasa Dada Mama Gagasa Nini Dada Mama Gasa Gama Nida Magasa Maga Kisa Gasa
So we've left the shrine of the great composer, the 18th century composer, Tyagaraja, and we're back in Tanjavur. And there was one place that we absolutely could not miss, and you brought me here. You brought me to this extraordinary temple. I mean, it is breathtaking, the size of it, the height of those pyramid-like structures.
Yeah, literally, it's called Periya Kovil, which means big temple, because there's hardly any temple that surpasses this in size, so it's called the big temple.
And it dates back 1,000 years.
Yeah, this is a symbol of the mighty Chola dynasty, which ruled over not only South India, but history says that their reach was as far as Thailand and Indonesia and so on. This dynasty was a powerful dynasty, and Rajarajeshwaran, one of the important kings, he commissioned this temple, and it took years and years and years to build. But today it really is a pride of South India, and everybody ecstatically identifies with this temple.
It seems like everywhere you go in Tanjavur there are temples.
Yes.
There are so many temples. So it must be a very religious place.
Yeah, and as I said, it's a religio-social setup. Temple is not just a religious setup. You know, I always say that in temples, you know, even now, when you walk into a temple, it's a chaotic atmosphere. And, you know, you have teenage girls coming there to flirt with teenage boys. You have matchmakers coming there to introduce a boy and a girl. You have women to gossip about jewelry. You have, you know, old women complaining and bitching about their daughters-in-law. Everything happens in a temple and it's allowed. The temple is supposed to afford all of this space. And, you know, life here and life next is all rolled into one, you know.
And now we're on our way to your village.
Yes.
Where we are going to hear, tell us what we're going
Absolutely.
To hear.
Absolutely. We're going to the village of Sirigamani, where we're going to hear a group of people sing the Sampradaya Bhajana Paddhati, a group form of devotional congregational music.
Well, we've driven for about 2 hours west of Tanjavur because Arunaji is bringing us to her ancestral village. And we've driven through very flat landscape, and this is sugarcane country. The houses are mainly one-story houses with thatched roofs. There are a lot of coconut groves. It's very rural. The soil is very sandy. Mm. And this is your village, Arunaji, called
Sirigamani.
It's too hot to walk there now, but we're very close to the Kaveri River.
That's true. And there are so many things associated with the Kaveri, particularly music. I mean, if there's a good musician, and if you want to compliment him, you say, well, it's not he, it's the Kaveri water that's doing its job.
Arunaji, you've brought us here for a very specific reason.
Yeah, because I realize that you're following the Carnatic music trail. And to me, I think what one hears in concert is just one face of Carnatic music. And what really happens is that in the background is the kind of music that we're going to hear, which is called Bhajana Sampradayam, which is congregational devotional music. All of these elements have a part in the formation of the Carnatic repertoire as it is heard on the concert arena. And also for Hari, because I deeply feel he came here as a mentee, but now I think of him more as a disciple. And I know that for him, coming from Sri Lankan origin and being in London, there's a big disconnect, and he must be going through a lot of adjustment to come to terms with his roots. And so I thought, when he can see the continuity here, that could heal a lot of pangs that he may or may have felt.
The pangs of difference.
Yes.
Belonging, and yet
yes.
belonging from so far away.
Yeah.
Because right now, where we are here in this village, in your village, there is a real sense of community. People are gathering inside the small ashram. Mm. Shall we go in and join the bhajan crowd?
Yes, absolutely. I'm so happy we are here.
Govinda, Govinda, Govinda.
We've finished the devotional singing, the bhajans. We've come across the road of this small village.
Yes.
And we're now in a completely different place.
Yep. We're in one of the devotees' houses. Yep.
But as we walked through this corridor here, there are about 10 kids sat on the floor with banana leaves in front of them. And lots of food. The smells of the food are wonderful.
It's lovely, isn't it?
So they keep bringing small amount of food. I can see
of different varieties of food.
Chickpeas. What else is there?
You've got your chickpeas. You've got a coconut-based curry, a fried lentil dish, and I think a little raita or yogurt dish as well. And finally, the rice is also being placed on the leaf.
And then behind us is the grown-up's room.
Yes, this is the grown-up's room in the living room.
So lots of people, again, sitting down around the walls with their enormous banana leaves,
which are they're using as plates. This is the traditional way to eat in South India. We're actually in sitting one. So I mean, we do this whole thing in sitting. So we've got sitting one happening at the moment, which we're not taking part in, unfortunately, because we didn't get here in time.
Oh, that's a shame. My God, it looks good.
It's really lovely.
Have to wait till the second sitting,
really lovely.
Harry. My God, that food was good, Harry.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
It was sensational. And I loved eating off the banana leaf. That was a special touch. And they got quite cross with me because I'd ate the food in the wrong order.
Yeah, there's really an art to it.
But anyway, we're back in the van now. We're back on the road. We've just left the motorway. And I can say one thing, which is, thank God this van has seatbelts, because driving on Indian roads is really an experience. You drive along and really your heart is in your mouth the whole time. But we're on our way now to hear a very different kind of music.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
So what we're going to hear now is real Tamil folk music.
Yeah. It is an absolute contrast to where we've just been. Especially because we were just hearing music that was completely laid at the feet of the divine, and that's what their inspiration was for singing. However, this music is absolutely just very clear, it's for anyone. There's no elite concepts, there's no divine concepts. It's all about day-to-day life. It's just about love, it's about sadness, it's about comedy, everything.
Harry, I gather here in South India, when you use the word communities, actually what you're referring to is the former caste system.
Yes.
And so what we've heard so far, the bhajan, the devotional singing, and the Carnatic music, is music that's performed by and for the Brahmin caste.
Very much the Brahmin caste that kept it up. Also the warrior caste or royalty as well, the noblemen. So it was they who enjoyed, relished, and therefore kept it up.
They were the connoisseurs and the performers.
Yes.
Whereas I think what we're going to hear now is music that comes right from the bottom end of the old social spectrum, although everything has changed,
Things have changed, they're constantly changing. But yeah, folk music was and is definitely something that looks beyond all those boundaries.
So we have four drummers. This
yes.
is folk music.
Yes.
This is Tamil
yes.
folk music.
Yes. Yes.
Four drummers and two of the long oboes.
Yes.
The
yes.
Nadasvaram.
Yes. Yes.
And one very interesting drum, which seems
that's
to make
called kind of, as the urumi.
That's the one that sort of squeals.
Yeah.
Sort
yeah.
Of
it's got the wailing
along the side
noise. Yeah.
The side of it. And what a fabulous place! And what a wonderful
that's
moment.
Great.
It's late
magical.
in the afternoon, early evening. Dusk, the sun has set, and this beautiful temple in the middle of the countryside by a coconut grove.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm so struck by all this. I'm speechless.
Why? Because, Aruna, you don't see this kind of music often?
No, I don't get to see this often. I don't know much about this, and this is my very first experience of live. It's a celebration of life. This kind of thing is an assertion and a celebration of life.
That was some amazing dancing.
Yeah, I'm
two
in
women.
Tears.
Yes.
I'm in tears. I just feel like hugging them and just holding them tight. What music, what dance.
These two women with the bells around their ankles and the pots on their heads which don't fall off despite the fact that they're whirling around. What kind of dancing is
this? They call it karagam. Karagam means to dance with the pots on your head. And what coordination between the drummers and the footwork, and oh man, it's the most brilliant experience I've ever had in recent times, really.
Can you say that this is, in some way, this is the root of something like Bharatanatyam?
We are at the root of Bharatanatyam. You could see the little bit
your
connection with
dance.
the grounded footwork, which is the base of Bharatanatyam. You could see that.
And the complexity of the rhythms.
Yes,
and the sensuality of the movements as well.
It's just incredible. Oh, wow. This is a day.
This temple that we're in now, I mean, just next to us are two deities.
Exactly. You can see their village deities.
So, Aruna, the music that we heard in your village,
yes,
the bhajan, the devotional singing, it seems like a completely different world.
Yes.
But we're in Tamil Nadu. This is all part of Tamil music.
Yes, yes. That was like devotion and divinity and offering. This is also an offering, but then it is very rooted in life around them, so it's very sensual. And in the songs, they will talk about local problems and materialistic problems, and, you know, they will talk about all that. So it's more to do with life here and now. Daily life.
தன்னனானே நானே நானே தன்னானே போடு தில்லேலே போடு அள்ளி மலர் கொடியே தன்னனானே நானே 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 ரோசாப்பு மலரே தன்னனானே நானே நானே தன்னானே போடு தில்லேலே போடு அள்ளி மலர் கொடியே தன்னனானே நானே 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 ரோசாப்பு மலரே
ಅಷ್ಟಾಷಾಢಾ ನಕ್ಷತ್ರ ಮಖರ್ರಾಸು ಹರಿಭೃಂದಾವನ್ ನಮದೇಶ್ಯಾಂ ಕುಂಭರಾಸು ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಾಥ ನಮದೇಶ್ಯಾಂ.
It has been quite a journey, not only in terms of the actual travel that we've done and all the different places we've seen and the many, many temples that we've visited and the different kinds of music that we've heard, but also spiritually it's been quite a journey for you, Harry. Well, for me as well. But now, having traveled for 3 hours through some very beautiful countryside, we've finally come to our last destination here in Tamil Nadu, and which is a very special place for you on a very significant day and sad day for you as well.
A couple of days ago, I heard the news that one of my gurus, Srimati Kalpakam Swaminathan, had passed away in Chennai, and we were in Thanjavur at the time already. To put it simply, it's a great loss to the world of Veena. She represented a style of playing known as the Gayaki style, and which is the vocal style, yes. And there's very few people with her hand. She was born in a little village called Pundottam, and this village is 2 kilometers away from another village called Kootanur. And in Kootanur is the only temple in the whole of India dedicated to Saraswati, the goddess of wisdom, the goddess of arts, and the goddess who holds the veena in her hand. So it was one of her wishes that she actually take me to Kootanur, to the Saraswati temple herself, to her
temple.
And that's where we are today. And it's a very significant day. When I phoned the family to pass on my condolences, they asked on behalf of the family, will you actually go and visit the temple and pass on the message of her passing? So although it would have been lovely to come here with her, in a way I have come here with her or for her. It's a bit surreal to be here. I'm sat in front of the deity of Saraswati, the only Saraswati temple in the world. My veena has just been offered at her feet, with worship by the priest, and then given back to me as her prasad, or what's called her grace. And now I'll sit down to play a few songs which I know Kalpakam teacher would have wanted me to play here.
And what are they?
I mean, compared to some of her other students, I learned from her for a very short time. But on the few moments that she had visitors and I was there, she'd always tell me to play. And then she'd point out, she'll say, see, he has my hand, and I have nowhere near her hand. But she was always so encouraging. I mean, she had this warmth about her. She embraced me like I was her family. And I have to be honest, I really loved her like she was mine. So I'll be playing the pieces today that I know that she would have told someone, see, he has my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Roots Academy protégé Harry Sivanesan performing at the Saraswati Temple in Kutanur, South India, recorded on location for World Roots. And next week at the same time, you can tune in to find out what happens when Harry and Lucy head to Sri Lanka. World Roots was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by Peter Meanwell. And you may like to know that on Wednesday, the 27th of July, the World Roots Academy will be coming to the BBC Proms for a one-off late-night performance by Aruna Sarum and Harry Sivanesan. Do check the Proms website for details.
The 2011 BBC Proms, the first weekend. And Rossini's magnum opus, Raising the Roof of the Royal Albert Hall, a rare revival of Rossini's William Tell. From the Overture to the High Seas. William Tell at the BBC Proms. Tonight at 6:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, in an hour's time, it'll be time for Jazz Record Requests with Geoffrey Smith. That'll be at 5:00. But with the time now just coming up to 4:00, it's time for Jazz Library. Here's Alan Shipton.
Today, Jazz Library focuses on one of the most distinctive drummers in jazz, Papa Joe Jones, and we call him that to distinguish him from Philly Joe Jones, who came a little later on. And to discuss his drumming, I'm joined by Richard Pite. Richard, let's start, before we hear any music, by just thinking what was special about Joe Jones.
What I would say about the general period of the 1930s and the way that the rhythm section, and particularly the drums, evolve in that period, is that it's an endlessly fascinating period. Mainly because you've got the whole history of jazz drumming, which is still there. You've got Baby Dodds and you've got Sooty Singleton still playing in that New Orleans style. Then you've got the Chicago drummers playing and what they're bringing to the mix. And then you have the new kids on the block bringing their own interpretations. And this is all getting mixed up. In one particular recording, you might hear something which goes right back to the very beginning of drumming styles, back into the early days of jazz. And then in the same 3-minute, 78 RPM, you're hearing something which is new, something which is radical, it's exciting. It's all there in the mix together. It's absolutely fascinating. And Joe Jones is a true exponent at the heart of this history lesson in jazz on the side of one 78 RPM record.
Well, let's listen to one first. This is a characteristic example of Joe playing with the Count Basie Band on Lester Young's Tickletoe.
And one thing to note here is that Lester takes the middle eight of the first chorus, and you'll hear very, very clearly on this recording Joe Jones's very distinctive hi-hat. But then, when he comes to take his first chorus, Joe Jones moves to the right cymbal.
Tickletoe by the Count Basie Orchestra in March 1940 from the proper box The Count Basie Story. And that four CD set is very much a panorama of Joe Jones's time with the band. We're actually going to move in a minute, Richard, to hearing a track that's not on that four CD set. It's from elsewhere in the Count Basie oeuvre from that period. But I think before we do, let's think about what Joe Jones brought to the party in terms of drumming.
The next track that we're going to play is a live recording of the Basie Band, and I think it's very instructive about the particular approach to drum kit playing in the mid-1930s and what made that so unique, so interesting. And I thought, in order to demonstrate this before we actually listen to the recording and have that problem sometimes of not being able to hear things as clearly as we would like, is just to bring in a couple of things from the drum kit and to demonstrate exactly what it is that we're talking about here. Now, the difference is essentially between a modern jazz approach to the drum kit and a 1930s approach to a drum kit. In the 1930s, I suppose what we could call it is a more compartmentalized approach to playing. And what he's doing, he's putting different coloring behind each of the soloists. So sounding something like this. We start with a full chorus, with the full band, with the drummer playing. Press rolls on the snare drum. The first solo comes along. And now he's playing choked cymbal behind the trumpet. Then we've got a piano solo coming up, so he might want to go lighter. So now I'm playing on the rim of the snare. Now coming up next, we've got a trombone solo. I've moved to the hi-hat. And at the end of the record, we're back with a full out chorus. I'm back on the snare. So you've got this tremendous variety of colouring because you're compartmentalising the kit. Now, the interesting thing that comes along later is when one is now using the ride cymbal from the 40s onwards, is that that tends now to be the absolute focus and the centre of all of the backing of the soloist. So once you're on the ride cymbal, that sound generally tends to pervade all the way through the choruses of the full band and the soloing. And as time goes on, the ride cymbal tends to take over more and more from the hi-hat. So the hi-hat gets very much pushed to the side, probably doesn't return in force in jazz until the days of jazz rock and funk, much, much later on in the development of jazz.
So what we're going to hear now is Joe Jones perhaps emphasising the hi-hat a little more than other elements of the kit, very much his signature. But apart from all the things you've shown us, I think the other great thing about this version of Bugle Blues is the massed feet of the band stamping their way along with the bass drum during the breaks.
It's a very exciting live recording, but what is so fascinating is that it's a perfect example of what we talked about right at the top of the show, which is here in a 5-minute live recording is like a compendium of jazz style up to this point.
That's a live recording of Bugle Blues made in the period from 1937 to 8 on an album called Jazz Drumming Volume 2. That's variously out on the FMS label or the Mouso label. This whole series of several anthologies of drummers from the period is a very good way to gather what was going on, what Richard's just been summarising in terms of drumming. Well, we've heard plenty of examples there of Joe Jones as a sort of compendium of styles, Richard, but I mentioned at the beginning of the track that it's very much his signature to use the hi-hat. Drummers weren't really using it in the way that he did. So can you just show us a little of how he varied the sound of the hi-hat from what had been previously known as the Charleston cymbal?
Around about the mid-1930s, there's a sort of, I suppose what we could call it, is like a streamlining of the rhythm section sound. And what Joe Jones was able to do with his hi-hat is he's moving towards a more legato style of playing. Now, I've actually brought in a pair of 1930s-style hi-hats, which sound a little different to the more modern variety. They're much thinner and they're smaller. But if I just play now, what I'll do is I'll give you the typical hi-hat beat, but I'll show the way that Joe Jones used to play around with that beat and reverse it and just make it a little bit more rhythmically interesting. So here's the straight beat. And here we play around a little bit. And so on. Now, the interesting thing is in the next track we're going to hear is that, again, there seemed to be some pact between Lester and Joe Jones. And at some point, Lester had obviously said, hey, I like that cymbal. When you play behind me, you use that cymbal. And what he's talking about is the top cymbal. And the reason Lester likes that is because the sinuous, long legato lines of his playing are perfectly matched by this legato cymbal with its long tone and its long sustain. It's perfect backing for Lester.